A warm welcome.
Blog Talk Radio.
In the beginning was the beat, and the beat was the rhythm of God, and the rhythm of God is the harmony of humanity, and where there is harmony, there is peace.
Greetings once again, family. We welcome you to the Thursday night Dare to Win call. We dare to win and position ourselves. No longer be the mercy of others. We're here every Thursday. I am Brother Thurman, a Lifting Us member, and we invite you in about 15 minutes to join the conversation with your comments, which ask you to just leave it to comments, not questions, but you can join the conversation at 929-477-2789, 929-477-2789, and if you got any comments, just comments, press 1, and that will put you in the queue. And also want to, for anyone that would be seeking to be on the broadcast by internet radio, you can just go to our website, usliftingus.com or www.usliftingus.com. And when you're at the home page, you'll see the gold bar and you look for where it says Ulu Radio. And once you click on that, you scroll down and you will see a globe, the planet with the headphones, and you click on Listen Live. And that's on the Us Lifting Us web page. Click on Ulu Radio, and then click on Ulu or Us Lifting Us Live. And I'm joined tonight with our guest, Brother Al-Kepan, and he is the writer, the creator of the book, Divorce Western Culture, Not Your Mate. Divorce Western Culture, Not Your Mate. And the topic heading is going to be, has Western culture got a grip on the African mind? And Brother Kebulon, we welcome you to the show, and give us how you feeling tonight.
Well, first of all, can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Yes.
Yeah. I feel great, and every time I'm in your company, I feel great. Yeah, I know I got a lot of demands, put a lot of demands on you, but I appreciate you accommodating them. Yes, I do feel great.
Good, good. All right, brother. So, your just to get started, your book is Divorce Western Culture, Not Your Mate. So, tell us what inspired you to write this book, and have you written others?
I Francis Fanon wrote, "Each generation must, out of relative obscurity, discover its mission, fulfill it, or betray it. Each generation must, out of relative obscurity, discover its mission, fulfill it, or betray it." Now, I'd rather just sit home and relax and not subject to myself about all the harshness in the world today, but I realize that in my passivity, I am guilty of all the atrocities committed against African people just by me sitting home. So I feel I had some information to offer, and I believe it was my duty to do so, and that's why I wrote the book.
Beautiful.
Have I written other books? I have written other books, but most writers will tell you they don't talk too much about the first book. The first book I wrote, the information was that, but I had a lot of errors, a lot of grammatical errors, and since it's my first work, I thought the publisher was going to edit the book, but he didn't edit it. So bear is spelled two different ways, B-A-R-E, two is spelled T-W-O-T-O-O-T-O, and those things wouldn't correct it, so I don't push that book. The other book I wrote, I was at a place in my life I didn't want to be. I thought that was my last time on this earth, and I wrote it out of that type of mindset, and I wanted her to push the book out so that I could live forever, that leave something behind. And that wasn't a good place to be writing. But this one is my first accomplished work. You know, I got a hectic schedule. I put everything behind me. I meditated, and I got this work out. So I really think this is a good piece of work.
Good, and it is. It is. And family, I have read the book. It is, and it's definitely will take your mind on a good journey and help to bring some clarity about a lot of things that people are confused about. And so your latest book, would you say that the book is intended to also address the grip the European has on the African mind that contributes to divorce and other relationship problems?
Well, when you're selling, and I become myself, I'm a publisher and a writer, and you try to get your point across in all manner of marketing, so the book is self-explanatory. Divorce Western Culture, Not Your Mate. The business is titled, I got this, having a senior moment now. The book is titled Divorce Western Culture, Not Your Mate. The business is Books to Uplift Youth. Self-explanatory, Books to Uplift Youth. Divorce Western Culture, Not Your Mate is self-explanatory. So often in relationships, a sister will blame a brother for his shortcomings, and a brother will blame a sister for her shortcomings, when the problem is not each other, but a culture that's alien to us. So if someone doesn't point those things out that you've been doing for years, for example, platonic relationship, after that, the Greek philosopher Plato, or we're not Greeks, or romantic relationship, we're not Romans. All right. So we just do things out of habit until someone pointed out that you're part of the European value system. When I say European, I'm talking about France, Italy, Spain, Germany, Greek, Rome, European value system. And so if someone don't point it out to you, you're continuously doing it, and brothers and sisters, whether it's male and female, whether it's a brother to a brother or sister to a sister, right, you operate from a European value system and not an African value system. You operated from a European cultural system and not an African cultural system. Put it that way.
Okay. All right. Well, They on your book cover, that picture that you have of the brothers, somebody, the European got a grip on his face. You got anything further that you want to share about that picture on the book cover? And
I was here to hit.
Go right ahead, bro.
I had in mind a picture like the picture on Carl J. Woodson's Miseducation of a Negro. If you remember the cover, it has an African with shackles on his mind.
Yes.
So I wanted a picture similar to that. And I saw that picture and I said, I just got to have it. I just got to have it.
Yes.
And when your mind is fixed on something, you can't deviate from that. So I just had to have that picture. So I saw the picture. I paid the $25 for the rights of the picture. Now, what you don't see about my book is that I don't give a lot of people credit. An African sister edited my book, and she did it just the way I asked her to. Certain words I wanted enslaved instead of slave. I wanted understand instead of understand. All these words I wanted to change. And so I asked her, did she want credit? And she lives a private life like I do. And so she didn't want credit, and for various reasons, because people would check it, think this person didn't catch all this grammar or caught incorrect grammar, but I did it intentionally. And she blessed it. She said, I understand what you're doing, and it's out of the ordinary to write all the Greek names in low caps and all the African names in large caps. And she just went with it. And so her name is not included on there. Sometimes we do works, and this book probably won't sell like I would like it to, because it's not in Barnes and Noble, and it won't be in Barnes and Noble. It's not in Amazon, and it won't be in Amazon. So there's many reasons why it won't sell, because I'm trying to keep it African. So these are things that you don't see on the cover. But, yeah, so that's why. And another thing, too, is that a lot of times when you have to go to a European, because Africans don't do certain things, like we don't make our own toilet paper, you may have to go to Kinko's or whatever, which is not what I did. But in cases like that, where you pay a fee for a service, then I'm not going to give you free marketing. See, I don't even like driving my car with a Chrysler in the morning. Because when I purchased the car, I wanted the factory from the factory, and it said, I don't want a logo. And the response was where a logo comes with it, where I'm not being compensated for it. See, you're getting free marketing. You're getting free advertising. I'm being compensated for it. So when I write the book, I took all the consideration that I'm trying to do this thing African. So I even had to self-publish it. I'm not a publisher. But I didn't want to go to European, so I published it. So these are things that you don't see in a work. So I'm trying to let you know what went into the work.
Yes. All right, brother. Well, go ahead and let's go right ahead and delve into the book and to help people to get clarity of what it's all about. And later in the call, we will give information of where they can make contact with you. And also, for those that's listening, if you have not been to the Us Lifting Us Facebook page, the book cover is posted on the page today, the Us Lifting Us Facebook page, and you'll see a picture, the image about the call tonight, but also the title of the book, the front cover of the book, and you'll get to see the picture, and it'll be good for you to see the picture if you have not seen it. And so, Brother Kevilon, go right ahead and tell us about your work.
All right, let me first of all tell you the reason why I said I wanted comments and not questions, because education has very little to do with what I give you. It has to do with what you give me. I impart information. It tap into the untapped potential in order to bring out that which is already in you. If I'm talking for 15, 20 minutes and I don't get a response from you, then why am I here? And so a lot of times we're so quick to want to get our point of view. We're not listening. So you're going to listen to me. And when I finish talking, I want to listen to you. So to get started, my book is titled Divorce Western Culture, Not Your Mate. What's culture? A culture is the glue that binds the people together. a culture does for a people what fertilizer does to the soil. It cultivates the soil. It helps to make things grow, where culture helps people to grow. And there are 7 to 9 aspects of people's culture: your history, your religion, your politics, your economics, your social order, creativity, and psychology. And they are interdependent, interrelated and interdependent. Since this program is based about economics, I never want to separate economics from the politics, because it's hard to imagine a big corporation as not having influence on certain policies, but also hard to imagine people living in the ghetto as having influence on certain policies. So what I want to do first, and this is going to be brief, is just go to history and tie the history and economics together. So we won't reinvent the wheel. I live in Gabriel Prosser City. Some call it Richmond, Virginia. That's the last time I'm going to say Richmond, Virginia, because we try to get away from these European names. Gabriel Prosser City. Sister told me it's Gabriel City, because she said that he had dropped Prosser a long time ago. So Gabriel City, that's where I live at. So where I live, you have the first charter black bank in the United States. And I take the position that people know this, but a lot of them don't know. And a lot of them don't know who Mary Lena Walker is. So I'm going to briefly go over this part so that we won't reinvent the wheel. And you have to know this person's name, because you can know what successes he had. You can know his lows. And at one point, the Virginia Commission just took it off the record. That might be a reason why people don't know. I don't know. But since I live here, and I know that's where it all got started, I'm going to go over this briefly, and then I'm going to move on to politics, because I think politics and economics should be interchangeable. I'm never going to speak on economics without politics. All right. The first charter black bank, and if you already know this, then I apologize, but some people don't know this information. The first charter black bank in the United States was founded by William Washington Brown. I'm going to speak distinctively, and I'm going to spell certain words that I think need to be spelled out. William Washington Brown. Brown has an E at the end of the name, B-R-O-W-N-E. That bank was called the Grand Fountain of the United Order of True Reformers. It was created March the 2nd, 1888. This bank is still standing where I live. I live in Gabriel Prosser City. And where we live, the bank is still standing. Now, in terms of our economic giants, where was Marcus Garvey at this time? Peace be unto him. In 1888, Marcus Garvey was 1 year old. Noble Drew Ali was 2 years old. Elijah Muhammad wasn't born yet. And black Tulsa economics was much later, because Tulsa, Oklahoma, the Oklahoma land rush wasn't until 1889. So this lets you know how long this has been going on. And we need to know who this person is so we can know the many successes that he made. This is in a speech he made. He said, and I quote, "Are we men and women standing still with our arms folded and mouth shut to see this demon of excessive indulgence, especially in alcohol, laziness, and cowardice swallow up our race?" Brown urged the formation of fountains to pool money and buy land. "Let us stop playing trifling and wasting our time and talents and scattering our little mites to the four winds of the earth, and let us unite ourselves in a solid band." This is 1888. Now, it said Brown's vision extended beyond abstinence from alcohol. He knew that what cocaine and drugs are doing to us today, he knew that alcohol was a problem. So his vision extended beyond abstinence from alcohol. He had insurance plans, hotels, published a bi-monthly newspaper publication with a circulation of 8,000, home for the aged, sick and deaf benefits, real estate company, a youth division, several business offices, 3 stores, four large meeting rooms, and a concert hall. Place called the Old Folks Home, a 634-acre residential facility for the elderly, grocery stores, farm implements, and goods manufactured and produced by the order's members. Eventually, he established a group whose goal was to break down crime, poverty, and wretchedness while promoting happiness, peace, plenty, and protection. Now, Brown died in 1897, but the organization continued 13 years after he transitioned. And in 1934, the Virginia State Board of Commission took it off the records. So you can't go to the Board of Commission and find information, but the building's still standing. And you can go to the Library of Virginia and find this information. Now, a lot of people don't know this information, but it's very important to find out what they did that was right and what they did that could be an error, so we won't continuously invent the wheel. So I just put that out there for those who never heard of William Washington Brown. All right. Now, connected with the politics, I live in a nice house, in a nice neighborhood, no shooting, no drugs, and some people say I don't live in a ghetto. But I started looking up the definition of a ghetto, and a ghetto is a colony. And I'm going to read, and sometimes we have tendency to say, those people over there, those people in the projects, if you could separate yourself from them. So once I get a definition of a ghetto, which is also a colony, then you see if you are different than those who are in the projects, so-called projects. Number one, those outside a ghetto is a colony. Those outside the colony manufacture products sold in the colony. Those outside the colony manufacture products sold in the colony. So those outside the projects, those outside the hood, are manufacturing products that the people in the neighborhood are using. Toilet paper, underwear, the car you drive, along with other products, are made outside the colony. Now, of course, this doesn't apply to people listening on this phone call, because the people on this phone call, they make their own toilet paper. They make their own underwear. They manufacture their car. Of course, I'm just being funny, but you see where I'm going with this. Number two, people in the colony lack employment security. They're dependent on those outside the colony for work and little or no wages and benefits. This too does apply to the people on this phone, because I'm sure all of you on this phone own your own businesses, so it probably don't apply to you. Again, just make it fun of them. Number three, people in the colony play with the toys of those outside the colony and take on their cultural norms, trying to keep up with the Joneses, trying to get the same car this man got. Number four, people in the colony are unable to protect themselves from the gatekeepers of those outside the colony. The Donald Trump's kitchen crew, those who are put before us as leaders, but actually they're misleading us. Number five, people in the colony are judged and punished by those outside the colony. People in the colony are judged and punished by those outside the colony. The highest court in the land is the Supreme Court, but they don't have to hear your case. And you don't vote for them, but they judge it on you. They place judgment. So it says people in the colony are judged and punished by those outside the colony. Now, some of you say, well, how can we protect ourselves under the umbrella of the United States? The Anti-Defamation League protects them people, their people. The Mafia protects their people. And once I knew I was on the program, I looked up some information. So I looked at the Mafia, and I'm going to read this real quick. It says, the Mafia arbitrates disputes between criminals, organizes and oversees illicit business deals, and protects businessmen and criminals from cheats, thieves, and vandals. This aspect of the Mafia is often overlooked in the media because, unlike drug dealers and extortion, it is often not reported to the police. It wouldn't be reported to the police because this is stuff that you're doing is illegal. But within that, under that umbrella, they are actually protecting system that they're operating in. Here's a scenario. A meat wholesaler wishes to sell some meat to a supermarket without paying sales tax. Since the transaction is essentially a black market deal, the agents cannot turn to the police or the courts if either of them cheats the other. The seller might supply rotten meat, or the purchaser might refuse to pay. The mistrust and fear of being cheated with no recourse might prevent these two agents from making a profitable transaction. To guarantee each other's honesty, the two parties can ask the local mafia clan to oversee the transaction. In exchange for a commission, the mafioso promises to both the buyer and the seller, if either of them tries to cheat the other, the cheater can expect to be assaulted or have his property vandalized, such as the mafia's reputation for viciousness, impartiality, and reliability that neither the buyer nor the seller would consider cheating with him overseeing the deal. Now, what it basically says is that once you got your economic program together, then you can govern the area that you're in charge of. So if you do something that the NRA would see out of place, they got the money. They got the economic program together. And when you say NRA, you don't think guns. You're thinking this is an organization that has an economic program together so they can punish us if we don't do this, if we don't do that. Same with the Anti-Defamation League. If you said something they think is inappropriate, whether you tend to do so or not, they got economic backing to punish you. So we said you need a military might. You're not talking about an army like the United States has, because I brought this up with John Henry Clark. We talked about economic and politics. I said, well, don't you need a military to protect your resources? He said, yes, but not like the military the United States has. And he mentioned the Anti-Defamation League. He mentioned other organizations, Chinatown or whatever, right? So some things that we can do, we're just not doing. And if we had an economic situation together, we could do it. Number six. And after I finish this, I'm going to take a break because I don't want to keep on talking and not let you make some type of contribution. People in the colony, if given the opportunity to vote, choose among political puppets of those outside the colony. We think that we are participating in the process because we vote for one or two candidates that they give us, one on the Republican Party and one on the Democrat. If I was to say I want one amongst us, Thurman, for example, to run as an independent candidate, I would have to go door-to-door with a clipboard, get so many signatures. If I get so many signatures, then I will get the money. Republicans and Democrats, they get the money already. The only time we've had a strong independent candidate was a person who was a billionaire that had the money, that had the resources to get around. So you can't separate economics from politics. You got to connect the two together. All right. People in the colony experience high crime, early death, and high unemployment. People in the colony are dependent on those outside the colony for health care. I'm going to talk about a little way. I'm going to talk about how economics can increase your quality of life, better health. Also, if you have a good economic program, you can provide health care for your people. People in the colony have the religion of those outside the colony imposed on them. And the last one, those in the colony are educated by those outside the colony. That's a big one right there. Those in the colony are educated by those outside the colony. And that's probably helped me when I'm writing, because I was getting ready to go to college and I had a miseducation of a Negro on my dresser for a year and wouldn't pick the book up to read it. Since I was going to school the next day, I remember something in the book Carl J. Woodson said. He said, you better get this first before you go to school, because when you get to school and you come back, people won't be able to reach you, won't be able to talk to you. So I managed to bypass that. I still make some of the mistakes we all make, but I'm not as damaged as a lot because I bypassed the school system in that area. But now we have to have our own schools and start from the ground up. And don't say it's impossibility, because people do it all the time. So colony and a ghetto sounds pretty much alike. Therefore, a ghetto is not way over there in a project somewhere. It's where you stand, because you don't control those things that are necessary for your very own survival. Even my ancestors, those who came before us and imparted knowledge and information, they were teaching at various universities in New York and Florida. But if they deviate from what was to be taught in school, there were consequences. So it's very important for us to have our own schools. All right. I'm going to go to religion next, but let's see if we have somebody, some comments or anything I've said so far, because I don't want to just be talking and you make no contribution at all.
Yes, brother. Well, you've been making a very good contribution to us. You've just talked about a lot of things that we would definitely agree with in terms of us lifting us and us pooling our resources and accomplishing the things like you've talked about and that our ancestors have accomplished, because they pooled the resources and they achieved great things. And so we're going to, family members, if you got any comments, just comments, you can call us at 929-477-2789. 929-477-2789, and press 1 when you're ready with your comment. And we're going to take a short break, and we will be right back.
Hey,
we thank you for being with us, and we're going to this very good topic tonight. Brother John is going to continue on with the conversation. His title of his book is, of course, Not Your Mate. And also, the topic for tonight is, Has Western Culture Got a Grip on the African Mind? And Brother Kebulon, right now, family members, as I said, you can call in with your comments at 929-477-2789, 929-477-2789, and ideally, you're taking notes, because the brother's been dropping some very important information, and it's right in line with the mission of us lifting us. Would you hold on just a minute, brother? We do have a caller on that wants to express a comment. Yes, caller with the last four numbers of 3176, 3176. Please give us your name and where you're calling from and your comment.
Greetings, Brother Thurman, and your guest, Brother Kebulon. This is Brother Kimbezi calling from Atlanta. enjoying the program immensely this evening. And I wanted to ask the brother what he sees as one or two of the keys to break the grip of Western culture on the African mind.
Well, you said one of the keys. Well, culture, Europeans have culture. Asians have culture. And the whole point of the program is change from African culture, African perspective. And that's what we have been doing. It's like a picture screen. What shows on the screen depends on what you put in your mental camera. If you change the film in your camera, then this picture on the screen changes. We have not changed the film in our mental camera. We got European virus system from elementary school to college. When you go to college, it's called a collage. When they put elementary school, the junior high school, and high school together, they come together, form a collage. And we got a collage of a European virus system. We need to replace with African virus system.
Brother, good.
Brother, do you have a comment?
No, brother. I just wanted to get a clearer understanding of you mentioned African culture. What are the aspects of that that you see the difference between African culture and Western culture? I'm not trying to be obvious, but just to kind of pinpoint it so that people who are listening have an idea of what they need to change and what they need to change from and what they need to change it to.
But just like when you're writing in a book, right, you got to have solutions. So I'm writing what's at hand, what we are doing now. And then at the end, as a matter of fact, instead of me doing it as I go along, I actuate to the end of the book. So 95% of the book is the way we are acting now, the way we are acting in history, religion, politics, social order, the way we're doing things. And then corrected the behavior is at the end of my book, which I might be able to get to this evening. I'm not sure.
Brother Kebulon, are you still there?
Oh, yes, I'm here.
I just
took my mouth away from the phone. I'm still here.
Brother Kabizi, are you still on the line?
Yeah, Bo, brother. But
well,
yeah,
can y'all hear him? All right. To answer the brother's question briefly, we live in a patriarchal. Can you hear me, Thurman?
I hear you clearly, Brother Thurman and Brother Kabelon.
And I hear you too, brother. All right, here's something that we could change. And I brought up a few times, and it went on deaf ear.
Family, I think what I'm going to...
Can you hear me now, Thurman?
Call back in.
I hear you,
I don't
Thurman.
Know why we've lost the signal.
I hear you.
I hear you too, Brother Thurman.
You hear me, brother? I hear the brother, I hear the sister, I hear everybody. Hello? Hello?
Go ahead, Sister Nanana. Were you going to say something?
Yeah, I was just going to respond to Brother Thurman to let him know that I'm hearing everyone quite well with no problem. So
I'm hearing her too.
Yeah, I think we should just continue. Go ahead, Brother Al-Kabelon. You were going
try to elaborate what the brother was trying to say to make a difference. Right now, we practice a European virus system in terms of our relationship. It's patriarchal, it's patrilineal. It's not matrilineal. Women gave birth to man. Man haven't given birth to anything. All right. So we could change that. Well, once we got economics together, we had a system and a community, we could change that. And I brought that up before about African brother taking on a sister's name. I hear the feedback. What's the feedback, Thurman? I hear the feedback. Can you hear me now? Hello?
Yes. We're hearing you quite well. Go right ahead, brother.
All right. I had brought up the brothers, right? Why don't you take the sister's name? Of course, it'd still be a patrilineal because she has her father's name. But over a period of time, it's going to be matrilineal. And no brother has responded to that because we still had a European mindset that I want my son to have my last name. Well, that's not your name. So to answer the brother's question, that's one of the things we could change. So in my book, I present things where they are at hand and then offer some solutions. We have a habit of saying he and then she, him and then her, and I make that mistake. But when I'm speaking, I try my best to remember to say her first and then him, she first and then he. Little things like that. You actually changing from a European value system to an African value system. It's Shaka Musa Barashinga before he transitioned. He gave us the names. And for a person to continue to live, you got to continue their works. And one thing Barashinga left us was, he was renaming places. He said, D.C., Banneker City. Richmond, Virginia, Prosser City. Baltimore's Tubman Alley, Tubman City. Philadelphia, Richard Allen City. So what I present to you is the way we're doing things now. And then you do an African, you know, as a matter of fact, we have to actually recreate some things. Because if you did things exactly the way they were 6,000 years ago, you'd actually be going backwards. So sometimes I'm at home meditating. I said, let me try this. So while I was writing my book, I just changed words. Just like Africans have changed words. They said, well, we weren't slaves, we were enslaved. And that's what my book is. When I got to a certain point where I thought that something needed to be changed, I changed it. I don't always wait for someone to get on TV and say, you know, this needs to be changed. Because there's an African spirit in me lets me know that this needs to be changed. So I was looking at these words. I said, platonic relationship. Ain't that Plato? Romantic relationship. Ain't that wrong? These are things that you do over a period of time. If someone don't point it out to you, you don't know that you're following the European value system. So that's what my book does. It points things out and then offers some solution. And the reason I ask for not questions but comments, because just like I was able to out of my own brain, out of my own mind, come up with some solutions, you have those solutions as well. We so often, though, just want someone to constantly talk to us, and we don't want to make any contribution at all. And I wish someone would call and make some contributions to the conversation. If you like something I said, say you like it. If you don't like something I said, say you don't like it. I take constructive criticism. I take harsh criticism. I just want the African mind to be awakened.
Well, thank you so much for the explanation. We certainly, you've given us quite a bit to think about, particularly in identifying one of the basic differences between African culture and European culture when you mention the primarily patriarchal exposure and that we have here in Western culture, which is from the European perspective, versus the matrilineal perspective, which we have in African culture. And certainly that can make a difference, I judge, in how we see many things in life and certainly how we approach relationships with each other. One of the things that I'd like you to comment on is how that difference between acknowledging patriarchy and the matriarchal system, how that makes a difference in a relationship with a man and a woman trying to relate to each other. What would be your perspective around that?
Before I get to that, I'm connected economics and politics. when Europeans changed an African matrilineal system to a patriarchal system, that was an economic move and that was a political move, because the man was on a throne by virtue of fact of who his mama was, not who his daddy was. So the women inherited the throne, but the man may occupy the throne. So what the European did was, I got to marry one of these sisters here. One of these sisters here, because even if I defeat the men in battle, all the information is in her DNA. So I got to find my way to move into this system here so we could change this. And so what we have now is the male is still dominant. When I changed my name, this sister at work came to me and she said, how much it cost? You pay hundreds of dollars to change your name. I said, this costs $30. She said, I thought it cost more than that. I said, it's the same amount it costs when you change your name when you get married. She wanted one name. Let's say Cynthia. She wanted one name, Cynthia. She said, you think I can have one name? I see no problem with that. She didn't want the name that she had originally, and she didn't want this no good man that's terminology she used. She didn't want that. She just wanted one name. I said, no problem. She goes to the job. She says she wants one thing. The person said, you can't have one name. You got to have two names. And they're tracing you now. You got to have two names. She came back to me. Said the lady told me I can't have one name. I got to have two names. I said, look, never talk to the person in front. That's the operator. Always talk to the owner. Talk to the one in the back. The one in the back said you can have one name. So she wanted one name. Let's say Cynthia. When I look at her ID, it had N on it. I said, Cynthia N, what does N stand for? No last name. If they don't see one, you don't have one. But they had to put that down there because it's wanted to trace you. So since I saw this, what they was doing at home, in my room, meditating with my own brain, my own mind, I said, now how can we resolve this? Because they're tracing us through the patrilineal. And that's why I went back to my studies in a matrilineal system where you may have a man on the throne, but he's only on the throne because his female line. And so I thought about changing that, but every time I bring up, brothers don't want to entertain it. They don't say why they don't want to entertain it, but I think the underlying is, I want this boy to have my last name. That's not your name. That's your slave master's name. All right, now what you asked me just now, we could connect this up with relationship. I'm getting to religion now. Now, all these men of culture are interrelated and interdependent. I could put this section under socialization. But it just happened to be out the Bible. So I'm going with the Bible. All right. Now, this is coming out the Bible. Women was viewed as property, if people don't know that. So if you got marriage today and your marriage roots come out the Bible, then that sister you marry is being seen as property. You might not see it that way because you don't know the history. You don't know the origin. So religion, which is one aspect of people's culture. Now, this is Western culture. It says the King James Bible. All right, so that's Western culture. All right. First Corinthians, if you got paper and pencil, write this down because I don't want you to say Kevlon made something up, right? And I told her sister, I said, well, this is facts. And she said, what facts got to do with it? So when it comes to religion, facts ain't got nothing to do with it, but this is facts. First Corinthians, chapter 11, verse 7 to 9. This is the good news translations, because a lot of Africans, instead of admitting they don't understand the King James Version, they just act like they understand it. So put both versions beside one another and get the English version so you get some clarity of what you're reading. 1 Corinthians chapter 11, verse 7 to 9. A man has no need to cover his head because he reflects the image and glory of God. But women reflect the glory of man. For man was not created for woman, but woman for man. Nor was man created for woman's sake, but woman was created for man's sake. I brought it up because we're talking about economics, and economics, they were property, right? So women is viewed as property then, and it's still viewed as property today. All right. Deuteronomy, chapter 21, verse 10 to 14. Good News Bible again. You can find it online. This concerns prisoners of war, women prisoners of war. And this is in my book. When the Lord, your God, gives you victory in battle and you take prisoners, you may see among them a beautiful woman that you like and want to marry. Take her to your home where she will shave her head, cut her fingernails, and change her clothes. She is to stay in your home and mourn for her parents for a month. After that, you may marry her. Later, if you no longer want her, you are to let her go free. Since you forced her to have intercourse with you, you could not treat her as a slave and sell her. So she's property, all right? And because you were victorious in battle, you can have her. You can take her. And if you decide after having sex with her that you don't want her, you can let her go. But she has been devalued now. And it's just like an enslaved African who's lost a toe or who's lost a leg. He's scratching dent now. So she's scratching dent now because this person has taken her. And this is coming out of the Bible. It's not me making up stuff. So, and some people say, well, I've never got there in church because they skip certain passages in church. But I know the Bible. All right. Deuteronomy. Can y'all hear me? Y'all still here? Hello, you still there?
I don't believe that something has happened with Brother Thurman's ability to communicate with us, but we're just going to continue. We've got a few.
You just went back. Now you went back. You went away. What happened? You went away just now. You went away just now.
Pardon me?
Are you going? You went away just now as if you went away from the phone.
Okay.
But you can't. But you. All right, now I can hear you. I got you. All right. Deuteronomy.
All right.
22.
What I would like to. Yeah, what I'd like to do, Brother Al-Kabalan, because we only have about 4 minutes left in our showtime this evening, would you share with us how you see the subject matter in your book relating to the economic situation that we find ourselves in now? Us Lifting Us Economic Development Cooperative is about the business of creating cooperative economic ventures and businesses so that we as a nation of people can, through the family and the cooperative economic process, move ourselves into a better condition. So how do you see what you're sharing with us in your book relating to that?
Because my book doesn't relate to just economically only. It relates to our total being. Because if economics or let's say our money issue was our problem, right? We got plenty of money. We just make bad choices. If politics was our issue, we got governors, we got mayors, we had a president. So the point being is that we have been attacked in all manner of people's culture. If you got the economic program together, then you're going to be attacked in another area. If you got that program together, you're going to be attacked in another area. So my book doesn't deal with one aspect of people's culture, which is economics. It deals with 7 to 9 aspects of people's culture, which is history, economics, politics. It deals with your total being. Because if you don't deal with your total being, once you get your economic program together, that you would do like one of these athletes did, pay $74,000 for a hamburger. You know? So it's more than you get your economic program together, setting a business right, getting your economic program together for what? You want to enhance the quality of our life. For example, if we had an economic program together, we have better health. Because, for example, the Nation of Islam, I'm sure they don't have a pig farm somewhere, and supplying bacon to our people, because they got economic program together, and they're going to make sure that what we grow is going to be something for the betterment of our people and not for the detriment of our people. So economic plays a role in all manner of people's culture, but all manner of people's culture are interrelated and interdependent. And so I don't talk about one without talking about its relationship to the other. So, but since economic is a component in my book, for the sake of this program, I was just dealing specifically with the aspects of economic, which is only a part of my book, compared to the other manner of people's culture that has to be addressed as well.
I see. Okay, well, this topic that you've been sharing with us this evening is certainly one that I think touches each and every one of us, that we have all had the opportunity to be involved in relationships, and very likely we have not given thought or consideration to how culture might have an impact on relationship, and certainly a very specific impact for us as people of Black African descent, since we have unfortunately been in a situation where we have been severed and moved apart from our culture. And so just the thought process around trying to see and understand how that separation and that division from our culture has put us in a compromised position as we are trying and struggling to have complete and full relationships is certainly a thought pattern that I think is worthy and that is well worth pursuing. So I'm glad to know about your book. And once again, that's Divorce Western Culture, Not Your Mate, to help us to understand what some of those forces are that are at play out there that affect us every single day. And we have learned to live with them so much that we might not fully be aware of it. So And did you have a comment that you would want to conclude with? We've got about 3 minutes left.
Here's another economic point. 60% of people on the Fortune 400 has inherited their wealth. And when I was told about economics when I was 23 years old, I was told you're single and you don't have any children, you don't need to be concerned about anyone else. And that was a bad message. And that was a bad message because I could have put myself in a position that my loved ones would have had this and had that. So I just put that out too. That's another thing. If you look at how they teach us in school about economics versus the Africa thing, they teach you to be individualistic. And that they don't teach you to pass something down to the next generation. That's all I want to leave with.
And that's an important point. Thank you so much for mentioning the passing on to future generations, because that is certainly a major piece, a cornerstone of what we do with Uplifting Us Economic Development Cooperative, is that we have a process whereby we can, if you in our listening audience participate with Uplifting Us, can ensure that you do have an opportunity to pass on to future generations. And for many of us, that is a new thought and it's new behavior. So for those of you who would like to research this further, you can go to our website. It's upliftingus.com. Upliftingus.com. All of the information is there for you, including information on how to become a member of Uplifting Us. And our phone number is there. You can call us at any time, and we will be happy to answer your questions. You'll get a call back from one of our board members. It's 404-592-2780. That's 404-592-2780. And we're here every Thursday evening at 9 p.m. Eastern, from 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern, on the Dare to Win radio program. This is where we have sobering conversations about the economic plight of Black people and the imperative that we build the global cooperative economic machinery that will free us and the methodology to pass it forward to future generations. Thank you so much, Brother Al-Kibalam, for being with us this evening. Thank you to all of our listeners. And join us again next week for another session of Dare to Win. Thank you.
Thank you, too, sister. Thank you, too.